Hey there. Thanks for listening to the Adulting is Easy podcast. This is your host, Lauren, and today we're going to make adulting easier by making money easier as we always do. Please take a second and follow, subscribe, review, add comments, and all of those great things if you can safely do so, aka you're not driving down the road right now. I'm joined today by Janice Torres, the creator and host of the award-winning personal finance podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. She started her first side hustle about 6 months before getting fired in 2014. With freedom as the goal, Janice really started her journey into online entrepreneurship. She's on a mission to help you be poderosa with your dinero because she didn't have a clue what she was doing with her money for a very long time. She's based in Tampa Bay, Florida, and loves drinking mimosas and her two dogs. Thanks for joining me, Janice.
Thanks so much for having me, Lauren. It's so exciting to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this, and thank you for being here. I do want to let everybody know this episode is sponsored by Steadily Landlord Insurance. Steadily covers many kinds of properties, everything from single family, multifamily, vacant, restorations, apartment buildings, condos, and even manufactured homes. They also cover Airbnbs and VRBOs. If you rent property to others, please support this podcast by clicking the link in the show notes and getting a quote. So our goal for today, let's make adulting easier for our listeners by discussing a personal finance topic, since managing money is a huge part of adulting. So Janice, you and I are going to talk about your journey into entrepreneurship. We got a taste of it there in your bio, but can you tell us more about why you wanted to go that route?
Yeah, so I think it's important to give some context into who I am, because I think it'll make more sense once you realize how wild it is that I'm in the position that I am. And so I am a first generation Latina. My parents are Puerto Rican. They were born on the island and came to the mainland, USA, in the 80s with the American dream, right? Like, even though Puerto Ricans are not born immigrants, right? We're born American citizens. It's still not... the American dream is still not as accessible there as it is when you come to mainland America. And so my parents ended up in New Jersey. I was born there and raised in a very traditionally Latino household. And I know a lot of people of color have told me, whether you are, you know, Black, white, Asian, it doesn't matter how you identify. Like, a lot of our parents give us the very much of like the same narrative that we're supposed to follow in life, which is just go to college, get a job, buy the house, have the 2.5 kids, right? Like, that's the American dream. And so I had a very specific plan for my life that did not include anything related to entrepreneurship. And I think mainly because I didn't even actually understand that that was an option. So when I think about what entrepreneurship looked like for me growing up, it was the local like corner store owner or the nail salon or the taxi driver. And those jobs always felt like you were exchanging a lot of your time for like a little bit of money. But you did those jobs because you didn't necessarily have advanced skills, right? Like a degree or something that could allow you to get that cushy cubicle job that gives you a corporate pension, hopefully, and like, you know, some benefits. So I saw entrepreneurship from that lens of like, that's something you do out of necessity. That's not something you do when you have privileges like education and access to just like other resources. And so my parents, they were not, you know, well off by any means. I grew up very like middle class. And I knew that if I was going to achieve the American dream, I had to go to school, get good grades, get a scholarship, go to college. So I did that. Graduated from college with a degree in molecular biology and chemistry, and I was planning on becoming a doctor, okay? I was planning on becoming a doctor because, as you know, a first-generation kid, like, we get 3 career options. It's like doctor, lawyer, engineer. Like, pick one. Those are the ones that are going to make money. Like, if you want to have a creative passion on the side, you want to dance, you want to sing, go do that on your free time, but that's not how you actually, like, go and you know, create a career. So I was planning on originally becoming a doctor. I was so burnt out by junior year of college that I said, Mom, Dad, I love you, but I'm not going to go to medical school. I'm just going to go into industry, see what I can do with this degree. And so I started working in the pharmaceutical and medical device industry, which is really big in New Jersey. So I had a lot of opportunities to like actually use my degree, which is hella privilege, because I know so many people that graduate and like are not even using their degrees. So, you know, I found myself in a STEM career, which is typically lucrative, and I was getting paid well for someone that just graduated. By the time I was 30, I was making 6 figures, and I was on this trajectory where it felt like I made it. Like, success was externally, you know, I had 2 degrees at that point. I got a master's degree while I was working, nice corporate salary, cushy cubicle, you know, the bench. And I had all those things, but I was freaking miserable. Yeah. And there was like this disconnect in my head of just like, well, this is what everybody told me I should want. Why am I so unhappy? And I started to realize that it was just this whole idea of me having to conform to a system that just didn't feel aligned with like who I wanted to be and what kind of life I wanted to live. I didn't want somebody dictating my time and what I could do and how much time off I could take and if I could go on vacation and having to negotiate a sick day because I don't feel well, but I don't have any sick days. And there's this idea that, you know, you have a cap on your income. And I had situations where when I signed a job offer, I was promised a certain bonus, but then when the end of the year came, company performance somehow affected my bonus. And I'm like, what the hell does this have to do with me? Why is everybody always telling me what I can do when it comes to my money, when it comes to my time? And so I was definitely like in a quarter life crisis, you know, and like, this is ghetto. This is, I don't want to do this. And that's kind of the spark that had me start to explore, like, what would you do if you could work for yourself? And I landed in the food blogging world because I thought about like, what would I love to spend my time doing? And what do I always spend a lot of time doing that I really, really enjoy? And it was being in the kitchen. It was like cooking. I love throwing parties and having people over and sharing recipes. Like that's my thing. And so I started to think about like, how can I turn this really fun passion that I love to do like into a business? And I started Googling my way to where we are now.
How long was it that you had this kind of off feeling that what you were doing wasn't aligning with who you were and what your values are?
Yeah. I think about, honestly, like 2 years after graduating college and having a couple of years of, you know, in working in industry under my belt, I was already like, this is not, like, I cannot do this for another 45 years, you know? Like, I'm looking at the adults in my family because I'm like fresh out of college and, you know, people in their 40s and 50s and 60s, and they just all looked exhausted. And I'm like,
yeah,
I don't want to look like that in my 40s, 50s, and 60s. Everyone just looks like they are dragging themselves out of bed every day. They are counting the days till they can retire. They are counting the days until like they just have more control over their time. And I just could not picture myself as a 65-year-old, like then starting to live my life. It just did not compute.
I feel that same way, and I totally understand that. I also, I don't know if you dealt with this too. My mom is a stay-at-home mom, and that's like her calling for sure. She was like born to do that, great at it. Now she's a grandmother to my brother's kids, great at that too. I also thought, okay, so I can either work till I'm 65 or I have to have kids and then I can stay home. Those were like my only two options.
And hope that you find a rich husband who can support you. Yes.
So bad. But it took me a while to be like, wait, what if I just make the money? I don't know why. I guess it's just society, right? They're telling, at least that's the vibe I was getting. And of course, that's how I grew up.
Absolutely. Me too. I never saw the women in my family being the primary breadwinners. Like I'm the first to be that in my relationship. Like the women always took a backseat to the money. They either worked part time just so that they could have flexibility to raise the children. You know, they took lower paying jobs, but that had like good benefits, maybe like a public service based job or, you know, teaching or something. And the men were the ones who created the financial stability. And so that was also a radical idea for me, is to like not rely on a man as the plan, because that's what a lot of us see.
Yep, absolutely. So you said you got into food blogging. That was your first foray into online entrepreneurship. How important do you think passion is for people when they're starting their business?
Oh, I think it's the fundamental foundation on how everything must be built, because passion is going to get you through those times where you're not making any money, which is the beginning, right? If you don't actually, if you're not excited about doing something for free, you sure as hell are not going to enjoy it, you know, for the extensive amount of time that it could take to actually build it into something that makes money. And the thing that I realized early on is that it can't be just about the money, because I thought that my key to happiness was going to be making six figures in my corporate career. I said, I hate this because I'm not making enough money. But then when that was not the issue anymore, I'm like, wait, I still hate this. So what's the problem now? And it's just like, this is not what I'm meant to do. And so I truly believe, like, if you're not passionate about it for free, you're definitely not going to be passionate about it when you start getting paid for it.
So true. That makes so much sense. So how long was it then when you started that blog before it started making money?
Yeah. So I always tell people you need to have a realistic timeline when you're starting a business, because most businesses are not profitable for the first 2 to 3 years. And so if you're not willing to put in that groundwork to really lay the foundation, to start learning skills that you don't currently have, to start really just like experimenting and seeing what works, you're going to be in for a rude awakening. And I think social media has painted a really unrealistic picture for a lot of folks into like how long it actually takes to grow a successful business. It's always the overnight success that people fall in love with. But it's like, wait, the overnight success took like 10 years, y'all. You just didn't get to see the build. And so for me, it was 2 years before I started to really figure out how to make money. I was really in the exploratory phase for the first 2 years, trying to figure out what my niche is, what the hell a niche even was, because I didn't start off my journey even knowing that, right? I started really investing time and energy into learning things that I didn't currently have a skill set to do. So things like food photography, lighting, writing for SEO, affiliate marketing, you know, brands, partnerships. How do you get those things? It was a lot of Google and YouTube and trying and joining Facebook groups and reading blogs and listening to podcasts. And all that stuff was what I consider like the most important investment that we can make when we want to do something like this. It's not even about going and getting another certificate or like getting a diploma from. It's like, just spend the time to learn what it is that you don't know that you need to know in order to make this successful. So it was 2 years. And in that time, I was getting really good at the content creation phase. So even though I wasn't making a ton of money in the beginning, I was learning how to go viral. I started going viral like maybe 9 months into my journey, because I learned that Facebook groups were a great place for me to post my content, especially Facebook groups that had like 100,000 people that were all looking for recipes. So I started to learn like, how can I actually get the word out about what I'm working on? And social media was a big part of that, and also learning about search engine optimization. So you got to put the skills in place before you can start making money.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I wanted to double down on what you just said there, Janice, was that you started and you were exploring as you were starting. I think some people explore for maybe too long before they start. Would you agree?
Yeah. There's so many people who are perpetual students and they think that that's doing the work. You know, like you're going to sign up for 17 courses, but you're not actually going to implement any of what you are actually learning. You're like, no, I need to read one more book. No, I need to listen to one more podcast. No, I need to watch one more YouTube video. And while I'm always going to be a fan of investing in your education, you also need to take action with the stuff that you're learning. Right? Because it's not enough that you're listening to this podcast and you're like, I want to get good with my money. Like, I want to start investing, or I want to pay off debt, or I want to, you know, build an emergency fund. Once you know what you have to do, now it's time to like make a decision. Start making a decision and start taking action towards what you actually want to do. So you don't stay in the like perpetual student mode, because that can give you this false sense that you're actually making progress and you're not.
Mm-hmm. So in 2014, you started your food blog, and we heard in the bio right after that you were fired. What was that like? Did you go straight into entrepreneurship from there, or did you get another job after that?
Yeah. So I wish I could say that like in the 3 month period that I was unemployed that, you know, I had $1 million like launch and I got a brand deal with like Better Homes and Gardens and I was on like, you know, the TV with Martha Stewart, but none of that happened. But what I did have is that I had 3 months to basically pretend play entrepreneurship. So I got to basically imagine and experience what my life could look like if this was like a full-time thing, if I took my content creation goals seriously and like turned this into a career. So I was cooking all day long, every day, writing blog posts, creating content, you know, hanging out on social, editing photos, learning all the things. I was obsessive at that point. And I was able to do that for 3 months because I got a severance package when I got laid off. So I said, instead of rushing back to work and like letting the panic take hold, I'm going to take this space. I'm going to be deliberate, not only about what I do for my next job, but also about how I get to spend some of this time without the pressure of having to go back to work. And one of the things that really helped facilitate that too, besides the fact that I did get a severance package, is that I've always been the type of person that lives below my means. So I was always just like spending less than I made. It was a natural thing for me. And I definitely learned that from my parents. I had a hefty mm-hmm. savings account. You know, I always had an emergency fund. Like, my parents were always just like, you need to have some money because things can always happen. So I always yep. was practicing my personal finances in that way. And I ended up never actually having to use my severance check. I was able to just sustain myself with unemployment checks. And I realized, like, first of all, I don't really need to be earning as much as I am earning for the lifestyle that I'm living. And mm-hmm. it gave me a lot of insight into what entrepreneurship could look like. So I was hooked at that point.
That's really cool. That's a really smart way to use those 3 months as well. And I like how you said, not let the panic set in, because I think that would be a natural feeling in that time. Yeah. And that foray then into entrepreneurship was fueled by being good at personal finance. Mm-hmm. So at what point did you're still doing the food blog, is that right?
So it still exists. It's more in maintenance mode at this point. So okay. I don't actively create content, but it's still a living organism out there in the internet that's just making money on autopilot, which is wild.
That's fantastic, first of all. Yeah. So at what point did you decide to focus on the personal finances and helping people with that?
Yeah. So I love telling this story because, you know, what I found talking to a lot of entrepreneurs is that our journeys are very nonlinear, right? Like, I think in life we're told, like, just do this, then this is the next step, then this is the next step, where entrepreneurship is just like, I'm just throwing all the things at the wall and let's see what sticks.
Yep.
So, you know, after being a blogger for about 5 years, I felt like there's something else I want to do, but I don't know what it is yet. So a couple years before I started my own podcast, I had discovered the financial independence movement because I was still in my corporate job while also still building my side hustle. And I just turned 30 and I'm like, I do not want to celebrate my 40th birthday still in corporate America. Like, we need a plan of action. So I was Googling, like, how do you quit your job? And what comes up is the financial independence movement. Like, literally, Mr. Money Mustache, I think, was probably the first thing I saw. And I'm like, holy crap, there's actually a solution to this. I don't have to sit here and wait until I'm 65. So at that point, that was the next obsession, right? The first one was learning about how to start a food blog. The second one was like, how the hell do I get out of this corporate rat race? And so when I found out about financial independence, I was obsessively listening to podcasts, reading all the blogs, watching all the YouTube videos. And after a couple years of being a consumer of a lot of personal finance content in that space, I kept seeing a really blatant part that was missing, which was people of color talking about this. Yep. I'm like, where's the women? Where's the Latinas? Where are the Black women? Where's anybody who's like not a white dude from Silicon Valley who's talking about this?
Right.
And for me, I didn't have any people in my circle who were either interested in learning about this or even felt like it was an appropriate conversation to have, right? Money's a very yep. taboo topic for most cultures, but especially I think for like marginalized communities, it's seen as just like very tacky to just like talk about how much money you make and like, you know, investing. Like, that's a man's thing. There's so much cultural baggage there. And so I'm like, I want to talk to people about this, but there's no one in my circle. It seems like there's people on the internet who might want to have these conversations. And so I was literally like in the shower one day listening to Cardi B and J-Lo's song, Dinero. And the chorus goes, yo quiero dinero, which means I want money. And it was like the universe downloaded something in my brain that was like, that's going to be the name of your podcast. And I ran out of the shower. I did a Google search. I'm like, wait, this doesn't exist. And I went and bought the domain. I downloaded an app on my phone after Googling, like, how do you start a podcast? And I started talking to my phone. I literally sat down in my closet and was like talking to my iPhone. And that's how the podcast started.
Here we are indeed. So when did you say that was like, what, 2020 or?
That was 2019. 2019. There's something around like my birthday that fuels me to start businesses, because both my food blog and my podcast both started like a couple days before birthdays. My birthday is in early May. So I'm like, I don't know. I feel like I always have like a crisis of like, what am I going to accomplish in this next year? And then it happens.
You know, that's interesting that you say that. A lot of people do that around like January 1st, the yeah. new year. I've always thought of my new year as around my birthday too. So absolutely. It's kind of funny that Yeah. I'm like, this is my next year. Yeah. I'm doing this. I'm not with everybody else. So I wanted to know, is entrepreneurship for everyone?
Ooh, you know, I feel like most of us have a skill set that you can sell outside of like a 9-to-5, right? Because I think the thing that confuses people is the value of their skills. There's a lot of soft skills that people don't necessarily place value on, but that are like very highly sought after when you think about how you can offer them as a service. So for example, let's say you're like a very organized person. My sister is a prime example. She's a Virgo. Like she is like a post-it note, like Asana board. Like the woman categorizes her closet. She's just like the most organized freaking person I've ever met in my life. And so I hired her to work for me as a virtual assistant because I'm the complete opposite. Like I'm the person that has 50,000 unread emails. She gets triggered if there's like 5 unopened emails. So I'm like, we are not the same. And what you have with regards to your ability to stay organized is what I need to complement me as a chaotic, creative entrepreneur. So
yep.
Those soft skills that you have can be very valuable to people who do not have those skills. A big thing is like the ability to teach someone something, right? Like when teachers are thinking about how they can change their careers, they don't necessarily understand how valuable it is to be able to actually break down a topic and explain it to people, right? There's a lot of people who will try to give you advice, but they're terrible at explaining like how you should actually do something. Teachers yeah. must learn one of the hardest skills, which is how to teach. And when you think about it, that's the skill, then it's like, where do I translate this into? What arena? Do I want to teach money? Do I want to teach makeup? Do I want to teach cooking? Do I want to teach meal prep? Do I want to teach people how to be fit and go to, you know, work out at home? Like the act of teaching is the skill. And then you apply it to a specific niche based on who you're excited to help and what personal connection you may have to like a specific area of, you know, life. So I think it's important for folks to think about, you're already selling your skills to an employer for a paycheck. So if you were to take them out as the middleman that's facilitating you getting paid for a skill and you sell it direct to a consumer, that's what entrepreneurship is. And I think most of us are probably capable of that. And it doesn't even have to be anything like super fancy, right? It could be like gig economy stuff. If you're very handy, like I hire people to build furniture for me all the time. I hate building furniture or like hanging a TV. There are some people who are just great with like a tape measure and a freaking power drill. That's a skill that you can sell, right? And so we don't have to make it so complicated that you need to like go and, you know, get a lease for a building and buy $100,000 of inventory and go take a business loan. That's not what entrepreneurship is. It is selling your skills to a person or a company and offering them something of value that can help them achieve whatever goal it is that they have. And I think more than ever, especially since we're in a time where there's a lot of recession talk and it's giving me a lot of like 2008 flashbacks, we need to diversify our income. Because I realized back in 2014 when I got laid off, I'm like, holy shit, I don't have any other way to make money. Like, what is going to happen here? If I didn't have a safety net of an emergency fund, if I didn't have family members that I knew I could rely on and like I could move back in with my parents if things got really difficult, like, what are you going to do? And so giving up your financial security for fear of starting your own like little business on the side, that's riskier than most people, I think, need to be taking on that risk. Like, just figure out a different way to make money besides your 9-to-5.
Right. I think a lot of people think the W-2 job, the regular 9-to-5 job, is secure. But if you're an entrepreneur, you have, I mean, tens or hundreds or thousands of customers that pay you. If you have a W-2 job, you have one, basically. Right. Like, that is not secure. I know it kind of feels that way. And banks look at it that way when you're getting a mortgage and stuff like that, but it's really not. And speaking of niches, right, we know that you are speaking to the Latina community with Yo Quiero Dinero. How important do you think entrepreneurship is, or exploring that, or at least knowing that as an option for the Latina community, people of color and women?
Yeah, I think it's an essential conversation that needs to be part of your overall financial planning strategy. I always tell people, like, you know, creating a series of income streams or diversifying your income is, it should be part of your overall financial plan, because at the end of the day, so many things can happen, right? You could get laid off. There could be a freaking pandemic. You could have a family member that loses their job and you need to support them. You could become ill, or you could get divorced, or you could lose your spouse. Like, there's so many things that can happen, right? And especially when you're a person of color or someone in the marginalized community of any kind, we already know there's a pay gap. Latinas make about 56 cents to every dollar that a white man makes in America, which is wild, right? So we're essentially being asked to pursue the American dream on half of the budget. And it doesn't compute, right? It does not compute. And so we can either wait for lawmakers and corporate America to start caring about this, which they really don't have an incentive to, because I think there's absolutely an intention to keep people under control, right? When you're broke and you're in survival mode, you're very much easily manipulated. You're compliant. And that's kind of how capitalism works, you know? I mean, if we really want to understand like the origins of capitalism, it's the plantations, it's slavery. And so when you have that context of understanding, there is no economic incentive for them to help me. I have to help myself. It's really about reclaiming your power for me and just saying, like, I'm not going to allow myself to be subjected to the abuse and the oppression that past generations of my family have had to endure because of a lack of financial security. So I think it's an essential thing for all of us to think about how we can focus on earning more, right? A lot of what frustrates me about personal finance content, especially by like the mainstreams, and I don't have to name names because you're going to know, but frugality and like saving money and like, you know, delayed gratification and like all that stuff. We have to grow up like that. Most of us who don't come from trust funds, frugality is a way of life. Our parents had to do that because there was no other option. It was out of survival. And so this idea that like we're going to frugal our way to wealth is crap. It's not going to happen. It's going to get you in a place where maybe hopefully, you know, like you're financially stable, right? We don't need to like go crazy with spending money, but wealth is not created from scarcity. And I feel like the frugality and the saving money and the coupon clipping and all of the stuff that we're told we should be doing, especially as women, because apparently like we have this huge spending problem and that's the only reason why we're always broke. You know, that's not going to get us to where we need to be, which is parity, which is equality. And, you know, nobody's coming to save us, y'all. I read a recent report by the World Economic Forum that says it's going to take 136 years to bridge the pay gap. Who has time for that? I sure don't.
Not anybody that's alive right now. That's for sure.
So it's like, if we're going to wait for NGOs and the government and you know, politicians to care, they're not going to do it. So we got to take our own power back.
Absolutely. And that's what poderosa means, right? From your bio.
Absolutely. Yes. Powerful woman. We got to be powerful women and taking back our power.
Absolutely. And that those pay gaps, those stats are absolutely stark. They're absolutely real. They're not easy to fix. There's a lot going into that. And good point about the frugality. I think frugality can be a good way to start. Look at what you're spending. I mean, is there any obvious leaks, right? And shore those up. But I totally agree with you, Janice. There's so much of this idea, like you're going to cut cable and obviously cut the latte or whatever and become like a millionaire. Sure. Like, okay. But there's not enough talk about you need to grow the top line too. You really, really do.
Absolutely. And, you know, another important fact to note is that the average millionaire has 7 income streams. So they are not out here relying on a paycheck. Okay. They are taking money that they're earning either through a paycheck or through a business and diversifying that into real estate or the stock market or, you know, all other types of things. They're creating intellectual property. I mean, the list goes on and on. And so you got to start following the actual strategies that the rich are telling you that they do and not taking the crap that they're posting, you know, on mainstream platforms that say like the reason you're poor is because you drink too much coffee or you eat avocado toast. They're not following the advice that they're getting rich off of selling people.
Well said. I have nothing to add to that. but to you, Janice, do you have anything to add before you wrap up?
You know, I love the fact that you are creating a platform where we can even talk about these topics, because for the longest time, I feel like personal finance was such a gatekept thing. It was, we were just given an inkling into like what we should be doing. It's like budgeting and saving. There was never talk about starting a business or investing or generational wealth. Like these are all concepts that my family is learning about now because I decided to start learning about this. And I think it's important as you become proficient to share that information, because as much as you might seem, as someone who consumes this content, who might be like me where I'm obsessively thinking and talking and learning about money, most people around you are not like that. And the information that you're acquiring by being here can change lives. So share the wealth. The most powerful thing you can do is share what you're learning and really like lead by example. When I started trying to convince my parents to start investing, it was a difficult conversation for a while. They're just like, I don't trust it. The stock market seems very shady. You know, it's a scam. It feels like the lottery. And what I had to do was I had to really like open up my portfolios and show them the growth over the past 14 years that I've been investing. And them seeing that, they're just like, oh, like you're really walking the walk here. Like you are actually telling us to do something that you are doing yourself. And so I think it's really powerful to lead by example and let people see how these changes that you're making are actually changing your life. Because then they're going to start asking questions. Ooh, what are you doing? Teach me, show me, where did you learn this? And that's really where we start to shift not only our own lives, but the lives of the community around us. And I think that's power.
Absolutely. So how can people get in touch with you?
So I am all over these internet streets. You can find me everywhere from Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, YouTube, Twitter, anywhere else you love to hang out on social media at Yo Quiero Dinero Podcast. You can tune into the podcast wherever you're listening to this one, Yo Quiero Dinero. And you can find us on our website at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Adulting Is Easy. I started a YouTube channel as well. This is being videotaped, video recorded. What year is it? So you can watch this there if you would like. I'm also on Facebook, or you can email me at realadultingiseasy@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Hopefully, Janice and I have made adulting a little easier for you.